Morgan Creek. (1757) The American colonies. It is the third year of the war between England and France for the possession of the continent. Three men, the last of a vanishing people, are on the frontier west of the Hudson River. Morgan Creek International presents a film by Michael Mann, Daniel Day-Lewis, Madeline Stowe. The Last of the Mohicans. Stretching away to a far horizon is a sweeping panorama of interlocked mountains. Beneath a clear sky, they rise above valleys shrouded in mist. Jody May, Russell Means, Wes Studi, Eric Schweig, Stephen Waddington, Morris Rowees. The blanket of mist hangs evenly above one region of the wilderness, enveloping much of the thick forest that climbs the mountain walls. Nathaniel Poe, known by his Mohican name Hawkeye, a tall, athletic man with long dark hair and dressed in buckskin, is running hard through the forest. Carrying a long flintlock musket, he passes through shafts of light that penetrate the dense foliage above. Elsewhere, a second man, Uncas, is also running through the trees, negotiating a steep incline downwards as fast as he can. Hawkeye leaps over an obstacle. His path intersects with Uncas's and the two men run on together. Now a third man, Chingachgook, older and slightly heavier than the other two, climbs a hill. The younger men are running at full pelt through the rich green forest. Splashing through a narrow stream, they stop briefly to examine something in the slow-moving water, then push on. Chingachgook is running with great purpose, a rifle strapped across his back. Suddenly, Hawkeye and Uncas stop, and Hawkeye lifts his musket. Up ahead, darting through the trees, is an elk. Hawkeye takes careful aim and fires. Somersaulting head over heels, the elk falls into a shallow gully. The two hunters pick their way down a hill towards the fallen animal. Chingachgook has arrived on the scene, and he says, "We are sorry to kill you, brother."
"The Lang, Nakhon, poor Nell."
"We do honor to your courage and speed, your strength." The three Mohican hunters crouch down by the elk, and Uncas makes a gesture of respect. It's nighttime, and a family, the inhabitants of a log cabin, become alert at the sound of the approaching Mohicans.
"Chingachgook! How are you?"
"Master of life is good, John. Another year passed. How is it with you?"
"Getting along. Yes, I am. Daniel?"
"Oh, John. Here's another quarter, I see."
"Yes, I did."
"Alexander."
"Welcome."
"Jack, how are you?"
"Hello, Nathaniel."
"Yes, thank you."
"Where have you been, Jack?"
"West of the Conestoga."
"Why is Uncle here?" You should have settled with a woman and started a family by now.
Mohawk Field we saw was 5 miles long in the river. Chief Joseph Bransfield.
You take much fur?
That we did. A lot. And the Hurricane's near trapped out now.
Where are you trading your skins, Castleton?
Zylerville.
Zylerville. The Dutch for silver. French and English want to pay with wampum and brandy.
So what is it, Jack? What brings you here?
French and Indian Army are heading south out of Fort Carillon to war against the British. I'm helping raise New York's militia to fill the Crown's levy.
Are the people here going to join in that fight?
We'll see in the morning. Where are you boys heading?
We'll trap over the fall. Winter in Kentucky. Find a Delaware-speaking woman for Uncas. She will say, you are the one. Bear him many children.
Can I have a boy like me?
Never. You're too strong. Turn me old too fast.
Oh, that's what he's doing to his mama.
John sits with his young son on his lap and smiles at his wife, Alexandria. The group settle down to eat supper together by the light of candles and a flickering fire in the hearth.
John Cameron, thank you for your hospitality. Mohawk got no quarrel with Le Francais. Traded furs with Le Francais. Now Le Francais bring Huron, Ottawa, Abenaki onto Mohawk land. Now Mohawk will fight Le Francais. And Huron. I speak for the Twin Rivers Mohawk of the Six Nations.
His Majesty King George II is very grateful for your support. How far up the valley? Up to Fort William Henry?
That's 2 nights and a bit from here.
It would be enough to remind you all that France is our enemy.
That's your enemy.
What did you say?
While we're at your fort, what if the French attack our homes?
What then, Lieutenant? For your homes, for king, for country. That's why you men ought to join this fight.
You do what you want with your own scalp. Do not be telling us what we ought to do with ours.
You call yourself a patriot and loyal subject to the crown?
Do not call myself subject to much at all.
I agree with some of what Nathaniel and John say. But I believe England's still our sovereign.
I'll go.
We're going to fight the French.
Brother and I will volunteer up.
I'm with you, Jack.
I'm staying on my farm. Any man who goes, his family's welcome to ford up with us till he comes back.
Boys, my sense of it is, we have enough here to fill the county levy. And it's a fight we ought to make. But first, we got to get terms from General Webb.
What kind? Where are you meeting?
We'll go to Albany.
Hawkeye and Uncas have joined a group of bare-chested Mohawk who are mixing it up with young men from the village in a rough-and-ready game of lacrosse. An elegant stone bridge is reflected in the smooth waters of the river it's spanning. Trundling over the bridge is a coach pulled by a team of four horses and escorted by several military outriders. Inside the coach is a young British Army officer. He's wearing a scarlet uniform jacket, and in his hand is an open clasp case containing the portrait of a young, dark-haired woman. The coach party enters the bustling colonial settlement of Albany. It passes a blacksmith's and a variety of modest wood houses with Dutch gabled roofs. Arriving at a building from which a Union Jack is hanging, the officer steps from the coach and walks inside, passing a handful of sentries posted at the entrance.
If they are not allowed leave to defend their families and homes if the French attack the settlements, the no colonial militia has gone to the Fort William Henry.
They will report or be pressed into service.
I cannot imagine His Majesty and all his benevolence would ever object to his loyal American subjects defending their hearth and home, their women and children.
Does that mean they will be granted leave to defend their homes if the settlements are attacked?
Of course.
You got yourself a colonial militia, General.
Jack and his companions go.
Major Duncan Hayward reporting, sir, en route to Fort William Henry and bearing dispatches.
Safe journey, I trust.
guess, and I didn't experience anything so surprising from Bristol to Albany as that I've witnessed here today.
Well, what's that?
The Crown negotiating the terms of service.
I know. One has to reason with these colonials to get them to do anything. Tiring, isn't it? But that's the lay of the land.
I thought British policy is make the world England. Sir.
General Webb glares at Hayward reproachfully.
I see you're to serve with the 35th Regiment of Foot at Fort William Henry under Colonel Munro. I'll be marching the 60th to Fort Edward.
Explain to the Major he has little to fear from this General Marquis de Montcalm in the first place, and therefore scant need of a colonial militia in the second, because the French haven't the nature for war. They'd rather eat and make love with their faces than fight.
Might I inquire if General Webb has heard from Colonel Munro's daughters? I was to rendezvous with them in Albany and escort them to the fort, sir.
You there? What does Munro call you?
The Scotsman has sent you one of his Mohawk allies to guide you.
Magua.
The Scotsman's daughters are at the patroon's house. A company of the 60th will accompany you, and Magua will show you the way.
Dawn, at the encampment, 6 a.m. sharp. See to it you're there.
Hayward rides a white horse into the courtyard of a large house, where he dismounts.
Take it away, sir.
He approaches an attractive young woman.
Cora!
Duncan!
How long have you been in Albany?
For days and days. And yourself?
Just arrived. By God, it's good to see you.
Hayward and Cora sit together at an outside table.
I don't know what to say, Duncan. I truly wish they did, but my feelings don't go beyond friendship. Don't you see?
Respect and friendship, isn't that a reasonable basis for a man and woman to be married? All else may grow in time.
Some say that's the way of it.
Some?
My cousin Eugenie, my father.
Well then, Cora. In my heart, I know. Once we're joined, we'll be the most marvelous couple in London. I'm certain of that. So why not let those whom you trust, your father, help settle what's best for you? In view of your indecision, you should rely on their judgment. And mine. Will you consider that? Please consider that.
Yes, Duncan!
It's gone. You've grown up.
We leave in the morning?
Yes, ma'am.
I shan't sleep tonight. What an adventure. Have you seen the regiment?
A few.
I absolutely cannot wait to return to Portman Square, having been to the wilderness. It's so exciting.
Magua, a fierce-looking member of the Huron tribe, with his hair shaved in Mohawk style, accompanies a column of about 20 British soldiers as it marches along. The men are moving in a file 3 abreast. Hayward is mounted and rides ahead of Cora and her sister Alice, who are also on horseback. The column is following a rough pathway through dense forest. Cora is gazing at the emerald greens of the natural spectacle that surrounds them. She turns to look at her sister, who seems to be tiring.
Alice, can we rest?
Absolutely. You there. Scout! We must stop soon. Women are tired.
Not here. 2 leagues. Better water. We stop there.
No, stop in the glade just ahead. and the ladies are rested, we will proceed. Do you understand?
Magua says Magua understand white man is a dog to his women. When they want to eat, he puts down his tomahawk to feed their laziness.
Excuse me, what did you say?
Magua said, understand the English very well.
Magua walks on ahead. Cora continues to stare into the dark recesses of the forest. Chingachgook, Uncas, and Hawkeye are making their way through another part of the forest. They're tracking, and each of them carry their long firearms. Arriving at a sheltered clearing, Chingachgook crouches down and holds his hand over the ashes of a burnt-out campfire, while Hawkeye scouts on ahead. Hawkeye steps into a fast-flowing stream, carefully scrutinizing the terrain in and around the water. He stoops down to examine a mark that's been scuffed into the moss covering a large rock. He then proceeds downstream. Chingachgook and Uncas follow on behind him, both staying highly alert to their surroundings. Magua turns from his position at the head of the column and walks back past the ranks of redcoats marching behind him. From beneath a garment, he removes a tomahawk, which he suddenly hacks into the neck of one of the approaching soldiers, before shooting a second man with his musket. The column's under fire from an ambush. Alice is thrown from her horse as the British troops, now in a firing line, prepare to fend off a horde of attacking Turon warriors. The near-naked Huron run from the tree line and engage the British in fierce hand-to-hand fighting. Cora has gone to her sister's aid, and she covers Alice's face as she watches the bloody fight unfold. The Huron are slaughtering the redcoats en masse. One warrior runs at Hayward on his horse, only to be felled by a shot from the officer's pistol. Nearby, a British soldier is battered to the ground by a Huron with a heavy club, who then scalps the man with a single stroke from a knife. A bullet brings down Hayward's horse, and Cora shrieks when she sees a Huron warrior closing in on him. Hayward quickly gets to his feet and strikes the man with a tomahawk he picks up from the ground, before drawing his sword. More warriors rush forward, but they're killed by shots from the forest. Chingachgook, Uncas, and Hawkeye appear from the trees and weigh into the fight. Brandishing a tomahawk, Hawkeye takes on two Huron in quick succession, deftly outfighting them both and killing them with swift strokes. He then sees Magua about to shoot Cora. Magua suddenly changes his aim and tries to shoot Hawkeye, but misses. Hawkeye levels his own musket, but Magua has disappeared into the forest. Hawkeye then stops Hayward shooting at Chingachgook.
No, Duncan.
In case your aim's any better in your judgment.
Chingachgook hurls a bladed war club, killing a fleeing Huron. He retrieves the weapon and rejoins Hawkeye and Uncas, who are picking their way through the dead near Hayward and the women.
Your wounded should try walking on back to Albany. They'll never make a passage north.
Stop it! We need him to get out!
Why is he loosing the horses?
Why don't you ask him? It's too easy to track.
can be heard for miles. Find yourself a musket.
We were headed to Fort William Henry.
Alumsituk, Windetak.
Yo.
Shokish Shao, Katalana Shina.
I ask a Katok Walawana Katakanik Yawunj.
We'll take you as far as the fort.
We're walking out of here fast.
Hawkeye joins his companions in stripping munitions from some of the dead.
Unless, Ollie, you'd rather wait for the next year on war party to come by.
The three Mohicans set off. Hayward glances at Cora and Alice, and all three follow on behind. Cora pauses to pick up a pistol from the ground, and she quickly hides it in her skirts. The small party is walking along a rocky outcrop near the base of a wide waterfall. Chingachgook is in the lead with Hawkeye immediately behind him. They climb up a steep shelf in the rock. Hayward's right behind them, and he pauses at the top to help Cora up. As Alice waits for her turn, Uncas, who's taking up the rear, stands eyeing her for a moment.
Scout, I'd like to thank you for your help. How much further is it?
Night and a bit.
Appears we're well away from them.
Maybe they ain't alone. That Huron captain back
the
there.
The guard is a Mohawk.
No Mohawk, Huron. No reason that he had to murder the girl.
What?
Dark-haired one.
It's Cora Monroe.
Murder her.
You never set eyes on her before today. She's only been here a week.
Blood vengeance. Reproach or insult?
Of course not. How is it you were so nearby?
Came across the war party.
Correct. Then you're assigned to Fort William Henry.
Nope.
Fort Edward, then.
Heading west to Kentucky.
There is a war on. How is it you are heading west?
Well, we kind of faced to the north and real sudden-like turned left.
I thought all our colonial scouts were in the militia. The militia is fighting the French in the north.
I ain't your scout. You sure ain't no damn militia.
Clear it up, ain't you?
Carefully pushing aside the frond of a plant as he creeps cautiously forward. He, Chingachgook, and Uncas climb over a crude wooden fence and make their way towards the burnt-out log cabin of John Cameron and his family. Lying in the grassy field next to the cabin is a body, and Uncas approaches it. He kneels down next to the lifeless Alexandria. She's lying face down with a bloody injury in her back. Having checked for a pulse, Uncas lays a mournful hand upon her arm. He rises again and moves towards the smoking remains of the cabin. Hayward, Cora and Alice have caught up with the others, and they too approach the ruins of the homestead. Uncas stands unmoving inside the blackened shell of the cabin. A young boy's body is visible amongst the charred debris as Uncas joins Hawkeye and Chingachgook, who are examining a footprint they found in the dirt outside the cabin. The three men stare grimly down at the mark, and Chingachgook traces part of its outline with his finger.
Is
Ottawa, to Francais.
What did you say?
Mirrors. Tools. The clothes. Everything was inside. They didn't take anything.
They're moving fast. The war party.
Let us look after them.
Leave them.
Whoever they are, though they're strangers, they're at least entitled to a Christian burial. They cannot be left behind.
Let us go, miss.
I will not. I've seen the face of war before, sir, but I've not seen war made upon women and children. And almost as cruel as your indifference.
Hawkeye turns and strides up to Cora, who backs away from him nervously.
Miss Monroe, they're not strangers. And they stay as they lay.
He turns away from her and walks on. Alice steps closer to Cora and puts her arm around her sister. With Hayward a few steps behind, they set off again, following the Mohicans away from the cabin. Hawkeye never once looks back at the ruined building smoldering behind them. It's nighttime in a grassy glade. Cora's been lying on her side on the ground. She rises and makes her way over to where Hawkeye is sitting, keeping watch. He doesn't react as she settles down behind him.
Why didn't you bury those people?
Anyone looking for our trail would see it as a sign we passed that way.
You knew them well.
He turns his head to look at her briefly.
You were acting for our benefit, and I apologize. I misunderstood you.
Well, that's to be expected. My father warned me
your
about...
Your father?
Chingachgook, he warned me about people like you.
Oh, he did?
He said, do not try to understand them.
What?
Yes, and do not try to make them understand you. That is because they are a breed apart and make no sense.
Hawkeye reacts to the sound by cocking his musket. Uncas and Hayward take up positions nearby. Hawkeye opens his powder horn with his teeth and hands it to Cora, who's produced the pistol. Up ahead, a number of armed men, members of the Ottawa tribe, are creeping through the gloom towards them. Hawkeye and the others wait, stock still, letting them approach.
No. Pas possible.
Mais pourquoi? Hein?
No.
At the Ottawa leader's word, his men retreat back into the forest. Chingachgook watches them go.
Why did they turn back?
Burial ground.
Cora gazes up and sees that hanging over the glade is a collection of human bones.
Read apart, we make no sense.
Your particular case, miss, I'd make allowance.
Thank you so much. Where's your real family?
They buried my mom, pa, and my sisters. Chingachgook family with two French trappers raised me up as his own.
I'm sorry.
I'd not remember. I wasn't but one or two.
How did you learn English?
My father sent Uncas and I to Reverend Wheelock's school when I was 10.
Why were those people living in this defenseless place?
After 7 years indentured service in Virginia, they headed out here because Frontier is the only land available to poor people. I hear they're beholden to none. Not living by another's leave.
My name is Cameron.
John Alexander Cameron.
Cora looks away from Hawkeye. After a moment, her eyes are drawn upwards to the sky, and he looks up too. They sit together in quiet contemplation of the stars visible between the clouds.
My father's people say that at the birth of the sun and of his brother the moon, their mother died. So the sun gave to the earth her body from which was to spring all life. And he drew forth from her breast the stars. The stars he threw into the night sky to remind him of her soul. So there's the Cameron's monument. My folks do, I guess.
Cora turns her attention back to Hawkeye and gazes at him intently.
You are right, Mr. Poe. We do not understand what is happening here. If it's not as I imagined it would be, thinking of it in Boston and London.
Or did it disappoint you?
No, on the contrary. It's just more deeply stirring to my blood than any imagining could possibly have been.
She lies down on the ground and turns onto her side, preparing to go to sleep. Alone with his thoughts, Hawkeye watches over her. The sky still dark as Uncas comes to a stop and listens to the sounds of the forest around him. Nearby, Hawkeye and the others are hiking along a trail.
Top of the next ridge, course downhill of it.
The men of the regiment will fetch water from the lake, build fires, and provide every comfort you desire.
I cannot wait to see Papa.
The party moves cautiously through the shadows. Up ahead, the sky lights up briefly, as if by distant fireworks. Beyond a line of trees, intermittently silhouetted by the flashes of light, a cloud of smoke is rising up from the horizon. The fort is still some way off, but its position is more than evident from the frequent explosions illuminating the sky above it. Uncas glances back down the ridge and spots movement behind them. Fort William, a large hilltop outpost, is under a massive siege from French forces. Troops swarm over an area of devastated land some distance from the thick timber walls. Artillery crews, positioned on wooden platforms, pound away at the fort with cannons and mortars. A gun crew work quickly to reload one of the weapons and push it back into a firing position. The fuse is lit, and the cannon roars. Moving across the still waters of a nearby lake is a canoe. Cora is crouched down low in it. A British officer is watching the progress of the battle from the ramparts of the fort. The red glare of a rocket lingers in the sky long enough for him to notice a small group of French sappers digging a trench a short distance from the walls. A British cannon is aimed at them. The cannon and several others like it blast away at the sappers, causing them to cower in their shallow trench. French cannon respond, firing a salvo at the fort's defenses, killing several soldiers on the battlements. The sappers return to their digging, whilst the artillery battle continues. Hawkeye and the other men are up to their necks in the water of the lake, slowly guiding the canoe forward with Cora and Alice on board. They reach the other side of the lake. As the troops inside rush to shore up the defenses, Hawkeye's party make it to the entrance of a sally tunnel in the side of the fort. Soon, they're being escorted through the tunnel by British soldiers carrying flaming torches. They're met on the other side by an officer.
Hold up. I'm Major Duncan Hayward, Captain Jeffrey Beams. Didn't expect to make it through.
Let's send them enough.
They follow Captain Beams through a passage which leads to the central parade ground of the fort. The place is alive with feverish activity. Amongst the men up on the ramparts is Jack, who hollers at Hawkeye and the others.
Oh, boy!
He's talking, Jack!
Olga! Thought you and Nathaniel weren't joining up.
He didn't. Just in to see how you boys are doing.
Cora, Alice, and Hayward duck down as an explosion takes out a gun crew.
Alice! Cora! Why are you here? Where the hell are my reinforcements?
Monroe leads them into his quarters.
Get Mr. Phillips.
Told you to stay away. Why did you disobey me, girls?
When? How?
My letter.
There wasn't.
What?
There was no letter.
I sent 3 couriers to Webb.
One's called Magwar arrived.
He delivered no such message.
Does Webb not even know we have a siege?
Sir, Webb has no idea. And he certainly does not know to send reinforcements.
Monroe looks deeply troubled as he takes this on board.
What happened to you?
On the George Rose. Attacked.
We're fine. Are you all right?
Yes.
What will happen here, Papa?
It'll be all right, girl.
This Magwar led us into it. 18 killed. These men came to our aid. They guided us here.
Monroe turns to face Hawkeye and the others.
Thank you. Do you need anything?
Help ourselves to a few horns from your powder stores.
Some food.
Indebted to you.
Miss Corder, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Phelps.
Mrs. McCann will get some dry clothes for you.
Thank you.
Go with your sister, Alice. It'll be all right, girl. It'll be all right.
Cora and Alice leave. Monroe leans against a map table, concern etched upon his face.
Might I inquire after the situation, sir, given that I've seen the French engineering from the ridge above?
The situation is his guns are bigger than mine, and he has more of them. They keep our heads down while his troops dig 30 yards of trench a day. When those trenches are 200 yards from the fort and within range, you'll bring in these 15-inch mortars, lob explosive rounds over our walls and pound us to dust.
They look to be 300 yards out. If they're digging 30 yards a day, you have 3 days.
Damn. Damn.
Man here can make a run straight through to Webb.
3 days is not enough time to get to Albany and back with reinforcements.
Webb's not in Albany. He marched the 60th to Fort Edward 2 days ago.
Webb is at Edward?
Yes, sir.
That's only 12 miles away. He could have reinforcements here the day after tomorrow. You, sir, pick your man. Major Hayward will provide a diversion. I'll draft out a dispatch. Captain Beams will seek you out and give it to you later.
Something else. Cameron's cabin. Frontier cabin. Came upon it yesterday. It was burnt out. Everyone murdered. It was Ottawa, allied to the French.
Aye. So?
It was a war party. That means they're going to be attacking up and down the frontier.
Thank you, sir.
People here. Mohawks. Settlers have family out there.
That'll be all, sir.
Chingachgook, Hawkeye, and Uncas all leave.
Things were done. Nobody was spared.
Those considerations are subordinate to the interests of the Crown. A terrible feature of war here in the Americas, Major Hayward. Let's keep your eye fixed on our duty. To defeat France. That hangs on a courier to Webb.
In the French camp, a choral group consisting of young girls are singing in a large marquee tent for an aristocratic-looking man, Montcalm, who stands with a tall tribesman.
I will give you 3 oxen for a feast, and tomorrow I will sing the war song with you at the great council fire.
The tribesman nods slightly and follows the choral group from the tent. Magua enters, and Montcalm approaches him.
Magua, how are things with your English friends?
The English war chief Webb goes to Fort Edward with 60th Regiment.
He does not know that my father's army attacks Fort William Henry.
Magua was successful.
The other 2 couriers died in the forest.
By now, Monroe would know his dispatch did not get through. He'll send another.
Gray Hair will try.
4 or 5, including 2 women, entered the fort.
The Gray Hair's children were under Magua's knife. They escaped. They will be under it again.
Why do you hate the Gray Hair, Magua?
When the Gray Hair is dead, Magua will eat his heart. Before he dies, Magua will put his children under the knife so the Gray Hair will know his seed is wiped out forever.
Miss Cora. Gentlemen looking for
you. Hello. May I?
As Hawkeye uses his knife to cut himself sections of cloth, Cora continues to treat a wound on Uncas's belly.
Just see, and it's going to draw.
Thank you, miss. About done holding hands with Miss Monroe.
Got some work to do.
Hawkeye's about to leave when he turns and stands for a long moment, his eyes on Cora. She seems slightly unsettled by the manner of his gaze, but returns it, almost defiantly.
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
She averts her eyes away, looking down, before finally meeting the directness of his stare once more. A moment passes between them, and they both find themselves smiling at each other. Still smiling, Hawkeye turns away again and goes, leaving Cora looking vulnerable and disarmed.
Monroe refused to believe what happened.
He does not even want to hear it. He's going to have to.
Get together by the West Bastion. Ian, Sharatarish, Angawizgane, and William.
Hawkeye's loading his musket.
Fight weak. Still, another 40 yards.
Hawkeye pours gunpowder into the weapon, then signals to a man who's preparing to make a dash from the fort, the courier. The courier exits the fort through the sally tunnel and races across the shadowy terrain outside. Aiming from the ramparts, Hawkeye shoots down a Huron who attacks the courier. A fresh loaded musket is handed to Hawkeye, and along with Uncas, he takes aim. They bring down two more men that threaten the courier's progress through the enemy lines. The courier's almost through. A final, brilliantly judged long shot from Hawkeye kills an attacking Frenchman, and the courier makes it to the distant tree line. Hawkeye lowers his musket.
And how am I to know it wasn't a raid by common thieves?
The cabin was attacked by a war party fighting with the French. They're sweeping south down the frontier, attacking farms and Mohawk villages. All the men are stuck here.
I need proof more convincing than this man's opinion before I weaken the fort's defenses by releasing the militia.
Chingachgook's of the same opinion about the raid. Taken together, that's gospel. Your fort will stand or fall dependent on Webb's reinforcements, not the presence of the colonials.
I judge military matters here, not you.
Your judgment is not more important than their right. Under agreement with Webb to defend our farms and families. Major Haver was there, and he was at John Cameron's. He saw what it was. What exactly did you see, Major?
Hayward notices Cora's eyes upon him.
I saw nothing that would lead me to the conclusion it was other than a raid by savages bent on thievery.
You're a liar.
Major! Montcalm is a soldier and a gentleman, not a butcher.
Easy for you to suppose. It's their women and children alone on the farms, not yours.
You forget yourself, sir.
We're not forgetting Webb's promise.
British promises are honored, and the militia will not be released, because I need more definite proof than this man's word.
Nathaniel's word's been good on this frontier a long time before you got here.
This meeting is over. The militia stays.
Does the rule of English law no longer govern? Has it been replaced by absolutism?
If English law cannot be trusted, maybe these people would do better making their own peace with the French.
That is sedition!
That is the truth.
I'll have you beaten from this fort.
Someday I think you and I are going to have a serious disagreement.
Anyone fomenting or advocating the leaving of Fort William Henry will be hung for sedition. Anyone actually caught leaving will be shot for desertion. And my decision is final. Get out.
Hawkeye and the others go.
Cora. I wanted to talk to you.
Talk with Duncan, Cora. I must manage. I cannot be an invalid schoolgirl.
Alice.
I'll see if Mr. Phelps needs anything.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. Cora, when we come together back in England and are married and away from this place, what had to be done and said here will matter not at all. I'm certain of that.
Duncan, I promised you an answer. You've complimented me with your persistence and patience. But the decision I have come to is that I'd rather make the gravest of mistakes than to surrender my own judgment. Please take this as my final answer. It must be no.
I see.
Hayward looks crushed as he turns to leave. The sky is still dark and brooding as the French strengthen their positions. Inside the fort, a group of Mohawks sit around a fire. Elsewhere, Ian, one of Jack's companions, addresses Hawkeye.
Yeah, Nathaniel, but you weren't ever for being here.
That's right, I saw it that way then, I see it that way now. Ian, if I had kin in the settlements, hell be damn sure I'd be long gone.
What do we do about being under Crown law?
I believe if they set aside their law as and when they wish, their law no longer has rightful authority over us. All they have over us then is tyranny. And I will not live under that yoke. So I will stay here no longer. Anyone caught leaving the fort could be shot, so each man make your own decision. Those who are going be back in an hour.
Out the northern sally port. Strike to the east side of the swamp till you clear the French picket line. Head north over the ridge, then come about southeast. Fork left in Little Meadow near free of the outposts and skirmishers.
Should have gone out of this long ago.
Got no families, Captain. Figured we'd stay and give a hand.
I'll cover you from the top of the bastion.
You're not coming with us?
I got a reason to stay.
That reason wear a striped skirt and work in the surgery.
It does. No offense, but it's a better looking reason than you, Jack Winthrop.
Push hard. Because you've got to clear the French outpost by dawn. Good luck, Jack.
Uncle Visconti, are you Stan?
Yes.
It's too many French.
And so few of us to fight. Not too many to die. But we've given our word to our English fathers.
Cora's in the infirmary, comforting an injured man. Many solemn-faced people line the walls of the confined space around her. Hawkeye wanders through the fort, passing amongst dancers and musicians clustered in groups, lit by firelight. Cora's moving through the infirmary, out towards the parade ground. Still picking his way through the crowd of people, Hawkeye scans the stockade, searching the faces around him. He sees Cora, who steps towards him. Their eyes are fixed on each other, and after a moment, Hawkeye takes her gently by the hand and leads her away. Presently, the two are standing in a secluded spot up by the ramparts. The red light from the fires is reflected on Cora's face as she and Hawkeye stand close together, gazing at each other. He runs his hands down her arms and then leans forward to kiss her. She responds, wrapping her arms around him, the kiss lingering for a long moment. They hold each other tightly, then stare, captivated by one another. Their next kiss has a real intensity about it. Hawkeye lifts Cora up and she holds his head, kissing his cheeks as well as his lips, as they give in to their passion. She closes her eyes and they cling to each other tightly, almost desperately. Holding Hawkeye's face in her hands, Cora seems enthralled by him. They kiss some more. Then she leans back in ecstasy as he buries his face in her neck. Time has passed, and Cora sleeps, leaning against Hawkeye, who has a protective arm clasped around her.
You, sir! As you were!
Stand off.
Captain Beam points a pistol at Hawkeye.
Take him.
Quick, old.
Chingachgook says, "Why do they make my white son prisoner?" And Hawkeye responds, "I helped Jack and the others leave." Hawkeye says, "This fight is not yours. I love you and my brother, and you should leave this place now." Chingachgook asks, "What will they do to my white son?"
He saved us. We were alive only because of him.
The man encouraged the colonials to desert in this very room and in my presence. Sir, he is guilty of sedition. Must be tried and hanged like any other criminal, regardless of what he did for my children.
But he knew the consequences and he stayed. Are those the actions of a criminal? Duncan, do something.
He knew the penalty for his actions. He ought to pay without sending you to beg.
You know he wouldn't send me. You falsely spoke of what you saw. What happened at the farm was as Nathaniel said.
But not with enough certainty. to outweigh British interests in this fort.
And who empowered these colonials to pass judgment on England's policies in her own possessions and to come and go without so much as a by your leave?
They do not live their lives by your leave. They hack it out of the wilderness with their own two hands, burying their children along the way.
You are defending him because you've become infatuated with him.
Duncan, you are a man with a few admirable qualities. But taken as a whole, I was wrong to have thought so highly of you.
Cora!
Cora, I would do anything I could to keep you from being hurt. But this man is guilty of sedition. And subject to military justice and beyond pardon.
Justice? If that's justice, then the sooner French guns blow the English army out of America, the better it will be for the people here.
You do not know what you're saying.
Yes, I do. I know exactly what I'm saying. And if it is sedition, then I am guilty of sedition too.
Cora walks through a stockade door and climbs down some stairs. Moving to the barred door of his cell, she sees Hawkeye on the other side. He puts his hands through the gaps and holds her arms gently.
They're going to hang you. Why didn't you leave when you had the chance?
Because what I'm interested in is right here.
What can I do?
Webb's reinforcements will arrive or not. If they do not arrive, the fort will fall to the French. If that happens, stay close to your father. Stay close to him. The French officers will try to protect the officers among the English.
No. I will find you.
Do not. Promise me.
Her eyes full of tears, Cora moves closer to the bars, and Hawkeye manages to wrap an arm around her. Her face is lit up as the bombardment commences outside.
The whole world's on fire.
His face close to hers, Hawkeye holds her head comfortingly. A French mortar crew are loading a heavy shot into the muzzle of the weapon. The fuse is lit and the shot is fired. It explodes in a fireball against the fort's timber walls. British soldiers are sent flying as more artillery is unleashed on the fort's defenses. Huge clouds of smoke billow out from the muzzles of the heavy guns as they spew out death and destruction. Some of the shots burst in mid-air, raining fire down onto the stockade and parade ground. Red-tinged smoke rises over the besieged fort. As a French delegate is met by a British officer, Hawkeye moves from the window of his cell and sits down by the door where Cora's waiting.
Remember what I told you. Stay close to your father and the officers.
Magua and some of his people look on as contingents of French and British troops line up opposite each other on the charred battlefield outside the fort. Montcalm and Munro are standing a short distance apart. Montcalm removes his tricorn hat and bows deeply to Munro, who removes his own hat and bows his head in return.
Colonel Munro, I have known you as a gallant antagonist. I am happy to make your acquaintance as a friend.
And I yours, Monsieur le Marquis.
You have already done everything which is necessary for the honor of your prince.
But now I beg you to listen to the admonitions of humanity. I beg you to consider my terms for your surrender.
Perhaps the general's glass can reach as far as the Hudson and seize the size and imminence of the army of Webb.
My scouts intercepted this dispatch intended for you. Capitaine de Bougainville.
To Colonel Monroe. Sir, I regret to inform you that I have no men available to send to your rescue. It is quite impossible. I advise you to seek terms for surrender. I remain Jérôme Webb at Fort Edward.
The letter is handed to Hayward, who looks at it.
This is the signature of Webb. And I know the temper of our men. Rather than spend the war in a French prison hulk in Hudson Bay, they fight to the end.
You've heard your answer, Monsieur le Marquis.
Sir, I beg you not to sign the death warrant of so many until you have listened to what I have to say.
Monroe fixes him with a steady gaze.
Go on.
None of your men will see the inside of a prison barge. They are free, so long as they return to England and fight no more on this continent, and the civilian militia return to their farms.
Their arms?
They may leave the fortress fully armed.
My colors?
Carry them to England with pride.
Allow me to consult with my officers.
Monroe bows, then moves to one side with Hayward.
I've lived to see something which I never expected. A British officer afraid to support another.
Webb can burn in hell, and we'll go back and dig our graves behind those ramparts.
Death and honor are thought to be the same. But today I have learned that sometimes they are not.
Sir.
Monroe can barely suppress his simmering anger. He returns to face Montcalm. Nighttime. Montcalm emerges from a tent and a line of four sentries step forward. They fall in behind him as he turns and walks away. Magua stands beside some trees, staring out across still water. Montcalm appears behind him.
Is the hatchet buried between the English and my French father?
Yes.
Not a warrior has a scalp, and the white men become friends.
My master owned these lands, and I have been ordered to drive off the English squatters. They have consented to go. So now I call them enemies no longer.
Magua took the hatchet to color with blood. It's still bright. Only when it's red, then it will be buried.
So many suns have set since Magua struck the war post.
And where is that sun? Magua's the son of his people, and he has come to lead many of them.
But Magua has power with his Huron people and others here. I know well.
Magua's village and lodges were burnt. Magua's children were killed by the English. I was taken a slave by the Mohawk who fought for the Grey Hair. Magua's wife believed he was dead and became the wife of another. The Grey Hair was the father of all that. In time, Magua became blood brother to the Mohawk to become free. But always in his heart, he is Huron. And his heart will be whole again on the day the Grey Hair and all his seed are dead. Does the chief of the Canadas believe the English will keep the terms?
Colonel Monroe would. But General Webb will not honor the agreement and send their soldiers away. I fear having let them go, which I must, I will only fight the same men again when I drive towards Albany.
Magua looks thoughtful as Montcalm turns and leaves. French troops stand to one side as a procession led by standard bearers and drummers makes its way out of the fort. Riding at the center of the standard bearers is Cora with Alice behind her. Cora glances over her shoulder at a following group of weary-looking Mohawk with a column of foot soldiers beyond. Montcalm salutes Monroe.
Monsieur, the fort is yours.
Monroe barely acknowledges the French general, his features set stoically rigid. The column of British soldiers continues to snake its way out of the fort, with Cora still looking anxiously over her shoulder. A wooden wagon is used to transport wounded soldiers. Hawkeye, his wrists shackled, is amongst a small group of men, women and walking wounded led down a slope beside the fort's wall. The column of about 100 soldiers heads into a forest clearing. The scarlet uniforms provide a vivid contrast against the variegated greens of the landscape. As the clearing broadens out, Cora takes another opportunity to look over her shoulder. Far back down the column, Hawkeye stares intently ahead, his height giving him an almost clear sightline over the heads in front of him. The column marches on past the wooded slopes of the valley. Watching from an elevated vantage point through a phalanx of silhouetted tree trunks is Magua. The column marches on at a steady pace. Suddenly, a Huron breaks cover, running out from the trees and striking a soldier over the head with his tomahawk. Cora looks round at the sound of screams as another Huron appears as if from nowhere and strikes a man down. Hawkeye looks anxiously around. In the column, nervous fingers cock rifles. On the shadowy wooded slopes, Magua and the Huron slowly and silently stalk the column. The Huron, numbered in their hundreds, move stealthily through the undergrowth like a pack of wild animals tracking their prey. Monroe rides down the column, his outstretched hand urging calm and restraint as soldiers train their rifles on the trees. Magua lifts his rifle high above his head. Monroe shifts in his saddle to look behind him as Magua's war cry echoes through the valley. The war cries get louder, and Cora holds a protective arm against Alice. A shot is fired from the edge of the tree line, followed by several more, before a salvo is unleashed. The column scatters in confusion, and soldiers unleash a hail of return fire. The Huron edge closer, seemingly in vastly superior numbers. Having dismounted, Cora and Alice huddle together in the grass. Hawkeye's shackles are removed and he grabs his rifle from Chingachgook. Bunker shoots a Huron on horseback before racing off with Hawkeye into the heat of the battle. A fresh wave of Huron attack and engage the soldiers in close combat. Soldiers drop in large numbers under the unremitting ferocity of the Huron attack. A Huron aims a shot at Cora, and she and Alice run for their lives through the mayhem. Another Huron scalps a prone soldier, and Cora raises a pistol and shoots him. Alice appears in shock as she watches a soldier being slayed by a Huron. Cora puts her arm around her. Hawkeye runs around the edge of the battle, knocking one Huron out of his way with his rifle and dodging others. Nearby, Ungus and Chingachgook fight fearlessly. Hawkeye shoots a Huron who's about to launch himself with an unsuspecting Chingachgook. Hawkeye appears faintly bewildered as he looks at the chaos about him. Hayward shouts some orders and takes a few steps backwards in retreat before losing his footing and tumbling down a small slope. A warrior leaps onto the back of Munro's horse. Munro fends him off with his sword arm, using his left hand to draw his gun and shoot him. Another warrior takes aim at Munro's horse and brings it crashing to the ground. The warrior rushes to scalp Munro, but is pulled away by Magua.
Before you die, know that I will put under the knife your children, so I will wipe your seed from the earth forever.
He draws a long, slim dagger, plunges it into Munro's chest, then, seconds later, gets to his feet and raises Munro's heart triumphantly into the air. Alice is still standing in shock as the warrior's hand clasps her face and turns it towards him. Cora strikes him on the back, but he knocks her to the ground. Hawkeye races towards them, slaying two warriors who hinder his progress. Hawkeye reaches Cora just as the warrior is about to slit her throat. The warrior lifts his gaze, and Hawkeye swings a tomahawk across his face. He rains several more blows down on the warrior before rushing to Cora and sweeping her into his arms. Hawkeye and Cora run off with Uncas, Chingachgook, and Alice through the smoky fog of battle. They come to the banks of a lake where Hawkeye spots three moored canoes. They wade through the shallows towards the canoes, coming under fire from a Huron. Hawkeye returns fire and they all climb into one of the canoes, with Uncas taking a paddle at the front and Chingachgook taking the other at the rear. They push away from the bank and out into the middle of the lake, where a heavy cloud of smoke has settled across the water. Suddenly, Hayward appears alongside in another canoe. He's pointing a pistol at Hawkeye.
There's nothing better to do in the lake today, Major.
When you fall into frigate hands again, I'll have you hanged!
Hayward puts away his pistol and continues paddling his canoe. Hawkeye's now joined Uncas and Chingachgook in paddling their canoe.
Head for the river!
Uncas jumps into the water and climbs into Hayward's canoe to give it some added manpower. Behind them, several more canoes are chasing. Leading from the front, Hawkeye directs the escape party into a tree-lined river out of view of their pursuers. The river narrows, with rocks either side creating a slender path for them to navigate. Taking a bend, they approach a waterfall as tall as their canoes are long. Hayward looks at it anxiously. Pointing the front of his canoe at the drop, Hawkeye raises his fist as they go over the edge, just barely staying upright as they hit the water at the bottom. Hayward follows, pleasantly surprised when he comes away unscathed. But as he comes alongside Hawkeye's canoe, he spots an even bigger drop approaching fast. Just as it seems they're about to go over the edge, Hawkeye gets out of the canoe, stepping into the shin-deep water, and brings it to a stop. Helping Cora and the others out, he then pushes the canoe over the waterfall. Hayward and Uncas follow suit with the other. Ducking underneath a rock at the edge of the river, the group proceeds along a tunnel leading them underneath the falls themselves. With rock on one side and a wall of water on the other, they follow the secret tunnel until it opens up into a cave concealed by the waterfall.
Where are we going?
Nowhere.
I don't understand.
This is as far as we go. We're lucky they'll figure we beached our canoes and headed across land. We're very lucky they'll figure we went over the fall.
Our only hope is that they pass us by.
If they do,
take the south rim down the mountain. 12 miles cross country to Fort Edward.
And if they don't,
we'll just have to forego the pleasure of hanging it.
Hawkeye gives an order, and Uncas takes out his tomahawk and goes to make sure they're not being followed. Hayward and Chingachgook check their gunpowder.
Darkness.
Yeah,
kicking
in.
Don't
push.
I'm soaking wet!
My father! Did you see my father?
From a distance.
Hawkeye takes Cora to one side. Putting his arms around her, he whispers something in her ear, causing her to break down. Clenching a fist with a trembling hand, she wraps her arms around him and weeps into his shoulder.
Say nothing to us.
They remain locked in each other's arms, a wall of cascading water their backdrop. Nearby, Alice is in a daze as she wanders towards the water, seemingly oblivious to the danger. Pulling her away, Uncas holds her in his protective arms, stroking her hair with his hand. Nighttime, and the Huron are searching the riverbank. Led by Magua, they walk onwards in single file. From his hiding place, Chingachgook can see the Huron's torches, distorted and shimmering through the thick curtain of water. He runs to the others. Hawkeye and Chingachgook talk quickly, frustrated.
Go ahead!
The bloody hell plan is this?
I want you to go!
If we don't, there's a chance there won't be a fight.
There's no powder! If we don't go in that, there's no chance! None! Do you understand?
Come!
You've done everything you can do. Save yourself.
Cora grips Hawkeye's arms.
The worst happened. If only one of us survives, something of the other does too.
No, you stay alive. If they don't kill you, they'll take your nose up to your own land. Forget you're here. You're strong. You survive. You stay alive, no matter what occurs. I will find you. No matter how long it takes, no matter how far. We'll find you.
The Huron are making their way through the secret tunnel, their torches reflecting off the glistening walls and casting a fiery orange glow about them as they move nimbly and quickly towards the others. Uncas and Chingachgook go. Hawkeye and Cora face each other and look into one another's eyes. Then, with the orange glow of the advancing Huron in the tunnel behind him, Hawkeye runs past her and jumps through the wall of falling water. He falls a long way with the roaring, tumbling water, his musket held out in one hand. Then he plunges into its foaming depth. In the tunnel, Cora stands with her back to the waterfall, looking dazed and in a shock. Hayward's looking anxiously back up the tunnel when the Huron come into view, their torches held high up in the air as they quickly make their way down towards them. Within moments, they reach Hayward's group, and with no pretense of ceremony, one of the Huron steps forward and knocks him to the ground. Cora holds on to Alice as Magua makes his way through the Huron men. He reaches the two women and stands in front of them, staring at them. Then he takes hold of a tress of Cora's hair and examines it.
Hey, Nige. Alana Yankees. It's none, Rada.
Another Huron steps forward and forces Cora's arms away from Alice, then binds her wrists with some thin rope. They tie Alice as well, then lead them away back up the tunnel. Outside, someone's being swept along by the strong currents in the river and is fighting to keep his head above the surface. The strong, foaming water persistently drags him under, but each time he breaks free again, limbs flailing. The stock end of a rifle is held out towards him, and the man grabs it. Uncas and Hawkeye are lying on a rock holding the other end, and together they haul an exhausted Chingachgook towards them. Hawkeye manages to grab his hand, and they both pull him up onto the rock. The three of them catch their breath. Then they're heading silently over the rocks near the shore and back towards the forest. They run at a gentle trot, slowly fading into the darkness and the trees. Daytime, and the Huron are taking their prisoners up a wide rock slope through the forest. Hayward's being aggressively pulled along by a rope around his neck. Cora has a similar shackle but is led more gently, and Alice has been allowed to walk on her own. Hawkeye, Uncas, and Chingachgook are running up the same rock slope. The Huron walks single file along a narrow path, high up in the hills now. Hawkeye's running, determination and urgency etched across his face. He stops by some bushes and examines its broken twigs.
Oh,
Then he goes off again, disappearing into the thick undergrowth. The three of them run quickly through the forest, one after the other, their rifles held low. At the Huron village, the tribe have gathered in a large sandy clearing surrounded by trees and straw huts. They wait while an old man with long grey hair and a blanket round his shoulders is escorted to a seat and faces them alone with the hills and a waterfall behind him. He says, "Your tomahawks are red," and Magua replies, "Many of the English are dead, great Sachem, and Magua has become a great war leader and seeks your acknowledgement." Hawkeye's group run through the forest and stop by a rock looking down on the village. Magua says, "And so I have brought three of my prisoners to honor you. Magua will sell the English officer to the French, and the reward is my gift to you, wise one." Magua drags Cora to her feet and says, "The women are the children of the white war chief Monroe. They will burn in our fires. Then all can share these trophies of honor." The village behind them comes to life as Hawkeye walks through the middle of it, unarmed. One of the Huron runs up and knocks him to the ground. He gets to his feet again, and the Huron gather round him, incensed. A man goes up and cuts him on the chest. Then another clubs him on the back. Hawkeye falls again, blood on his tunic, but gets painfully to his feet. An old woman shouts at him. The group are pressing behind him, but he walks on. Magua is talking with Sachem when he reaches them.
"Don't speak Huron, speak French, Major." "Oh. Yes. Translate for me into French every word as I say it. I come to you unarmed and in peace. So unstop your ears, Sachem. Let the children of the dead Colonel Monroe go free. Take fire out of the English anger over the murder of their helpless ones."
Magua says, "Montcalm and our friends, the French, are stronger than the English. We do not fear English anger."
"Sachem, the French fathers made peace. Magua broke it. It is false that the French will be friends still to the Huron."
Magua says, "It made our French father happy to know that he would never have to fight the same English again." And continues, "Now the French also fear Huron. That is good. When the Huron is stronger from the fear, we will make the new terms of trade with the French. We will become traders as the whites. Take land from the Abenaki, furs from the Osage, Sauk and Fox. Trade for gold." Magua says, "No less than the whites, as strong as the whites."
"Would Magua use the ways of Le Francais and the Yengeese? Would you?"
"Yes."
"Would the Huron make his Algonquin brothers foolish with brandy and steal his lands to sell them for gold to the white man? Would Huron have greed for more land than a man can use? Would Huron fool Senegrin to take in all the furs of all the animals of the forest for beads and strong whiskey? Would the Huron kill every man, woman, and child of their enemy? Those are the ways of the Yengeese and the Francais traders, and their masters in Europe infected with the sickness of greed. Magua's heart is twisted. He would make himself into what twisted him. I am Nathaniel of the Yengeese, Hawkeye, adopted son of Chingachgook of the Mohican people. Let the children of the dead Monroe and the Yengeese officer go free. This belt, which is a record of the days of my father's people, speaks for my truth."
"You speak poison with two tongues," says Magua, but Sachem stops him. They wait, watching.
I'm blind. If you ain't come.
Sachem says the white man came and night entered our future with him. Our council has asked the question since I was a boy. What are the Huron to do? The Huron stand listening, as Sachem says. Magua is a great war captain, but his path has never been the Huron one. Magua flinches, and Hawkeye frowns. Sachem says, Magua, take younger daughter of Monroe so that Monroe's seed doesn't die, and Magua's heart is healed. English officer will go back to English, so their hatred burns less bright. Dark child of Monroe will burn in fire for Magua's dead children. Long Rifle, go in peace. The Huron grab Cora.
Me for her!
Hayward shouts, take me, a British officer, me for her. Magua says, you will go west to the Huron of the lakes. This is not the voice of wisdom. You are women, slaves, dogs. I spit on you.
I am the Long Carabine. My death is a great honor to the Huron. Take me. You tell him.
Cora shakes her head.
Yes.
Hayward and Hawkeye watch each other. Then Sachem slowly nods his head. The Huron take Cora to Hawkeye and grab Hayward instead.
Take me! My God, come and serve! Take her! Get out!
Duncan, what are they doing to Duncan? We're
family! Hawkeye drags Cora away while Magua takes Alice in a different direction. Watching from their hiding place above the village, Uncas gently rests his hand on Chingachgook's shoulder, then sets off through the forest. The Huron gather round a fire as Hayward's raised onto it. Hawkeye and Cora run through the trees at the back of the village to where Chingachgook's waiting. He throws Hawkeye his rifle, and he takes aim at Hayward, who's crying out in pain. Tied to its wooden frame, Haywood's previously agonized body slumps and his head hangs forward. Hawkeye turns away, picks up a bag, and sets off through the forest again with Cora close behind him. Uncas is going quickly up a narrow path that runs between the large boulders and trees on the hillside. The Huron walk in single file along a natural path in the stone hillside. Uncas sprints up the rock face, running with the agility and balance of a wild animal. From high up, the thickly covered hills stretch off into the distance, soft white clouds settling over them as they recede. The nearest one has a narrow waterfall which cascades down rock that's been worn smooth over time with the wind and rain. With a sheer drop on one side, the Huron and Alice walk towards the waterfall in single file as Hawkeye and Chingachgook scramble up the hillside. One of the Huron has Alice by the arm and drags her as she struggles along the pathway, trying to keep the hem of her dress off the ground. Two of the Huron are walking quite away in front when Uncas jumps out from behind a boulder. He rams one in the head with his rifle and shoots the second, who falls over the edge. Uncas fights another, using his gun as a staff, and knocks him to the ground. The Huron's bullets miss as he charges forward to the next man, then to Magua. Uncas fights with a tomahawk, but in the close combat, Magua cuts him across his stomach. He stops and looks down at his wound, then up at Magua, and charges him. They fight on top of a boulder, and Magua wrestles him to the ground. They roll down a small slope, each holding a knife or tomahawk, and when they come to rest, Uncas stays still on his back. Alice looks away, distraught. Chingachgook runs along another path, closely followed by Hawkeye. Uncas, wounded and bloody, gets slowly to his feet as Magua stands over him. He tries a final blow, but Magua blocks it and sticks his knife in Uncas's side. Chingachgook runs up the path in time to see Magua twist the knife and pull it out, then push Uncas over the edge. Hawkeye arrives seconds later. Uncas's body falls silently through the air, and Magua turns to face Alice, who's staring at him in shock and stepping towards the overhang. Magua turns to watch her, his face without expression, as she deliberately places her feet on the edge of the rock, her back turned to the drop. Magua steps forward as she turns her head to look behind her at the long fall, the trees and rocks far below. She looks back at him, suddenly a hint of defiance in her eyes, and he watches her warily. He lowers his knife and holds out his other blood-stained hand towards her. He flicks it twice, summoning her. But Alice turns slowly back towards the drop and lets her body go. She falls silently through the air, her dress billowing around her. Korra arrives as Magua, still without expression, turns and walks on. The other Huron follow. Korra screams with anguish. Alice's body is just a small white speck on the grey rocks below. Chingachgook and Hawkeye run along the path, the Huron just in front of them. One at the back hears them, turns and raises his rifle, but Hawkeye shoots him dead. A few others turn and jog back to face Hawkeye and Chingachgook, who are sprinting towards them. Chingachgook shoots one as he's running, then smacks another in the neck with his gun. Hawkeye takes out two Huron with the two muskets he's carrying. He drops one and picks up the dead man's. Chingachgook slices a man open as he runs past him. Hawkeye shoots one of three that face them, and now Magua's waiting, and Chingachgook charges towards him. He rolls under Magua's strike and whacks him on the back, then hits him on the arm and the side. As Magua sways, Chingachgook raises his weapon and brings it down on his collarbone. Magua, barely able to stand, looks Chingachgook straight in the eye, slightly dazed. Then Chingachgook turns once on the spot and swings the blade of his war club into Magua's stomach, and he falls to the ground. He lands on the wet rock, eyes wide open. Korra stands as Hawkeye goes back to her, and they embrace. Hawkeye holds her in his arms, then turns to look behind him, and pushes her onwards, away. He follows her behind the rock. Looking out over a wide and distant horizon of rolling green hills beneath a pale blue sky. Hawkeye and Chingachgook are standing on the edge of a cliff together. They hold their fists in the air and rotate their arms in a circle, then throw handfuls of dry leaves into the breeze. Korra's standing a short distance away, her eyes pricked with tears.
Great Spirit and the maker of all life. A warrior goes to you swift and straight as an arrow shot into the sun. Welcome him and let him take his place at the council fire of my people. He is Uncas, my son. Tell them to be patient and ask death for speed. For they are all there, but one. I, Chingachgook, last of the Mohicans.
He turns to look at Hawkeye, who's watching him, and the two men hold each other's gaze for a long moment. Chingachgook looks back out to the horizon, and Korra steps forward to join them. Hawkeye holds his hand out and steps towards her. They embrace, and she kisses his cheek tenderly before burying her head in his shoulder. Hawkeye holds her close, looking out over the hills beyond. They stand apart for a moment and look deeply into each other's eyes. Then Korra turns as well, and the three of them stand in a line, staring thoughtfully over the rolling hills that stretch out before them. As the sun sinks lower, they become silhouettes against the dark hills and white sky, with tinges of orange lighting up the horizon.